Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson with my co-host Celia Farber. Today, we have a very special guest who will light your hair on fire again about the Russiagate. She's part of the Russiagate story. Intelligence scholar and UK citizen, Svetlana Lakhova was born in Moscow and was a postgraduate researcher at Cambridge University, writing a book called The Spy Who Changed History, The Untold Story About How the Soviet Union Stole America's Secrets, with her mentor of 20 years. Her mentor, Christopher Andrews, is professor of modern and contemporary history at Cambridge, with a particular interest in the history of intelligence services. While Lakhova was at Cambridge, Andrews regularly invited dignitaries in the intelligence world to come speak to his students. In 2014, General Flynn, then the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency during the Obama administration, came to speak, after which there was a dinner in his honor. Andrews invited Lakhova to that dinner, which, unbeknownst to her at the time, was the catalyst for dragging her into Russiagate and buzzsawing her life. Like President-elect Trump's foreign policy advisor, George Papadopoulos, but with one major difference, Lakhova had absolutely no connection to Trump or his people, ever. Lakhova was ensnared by a member of the same shady group that entrapped Papadopoulos. She identifies that member as longtime CIA operative Stefan Halper, who was a senior fellow at Cambridge University when Lakhova was there. If you still don't think Russiagate was an intelligence operation looking to ensure that Trump never saw the inside of the White House, you should listen carefully to Svetlana Lakhova's story, because as an intelligence scholar, she has the skills to uncover and understand just what happened to her, put it in historical context, and show how it fits into a much bigger picture. Welcome, Svetlana.
Thank you very much, Christina. Pleasure to be with you this morning.
So, Svetlana, let her rip. Tell us your story.
Right. Well, I think you did a great summary of, my previous life, which was a very normal, boring life at Cambridge, and researching 1930s, and just being a scholar and living in Britain, had nothing to do with politics. In fact, wasn't even interested in politics, and particularly, of course, American politics. Given that I'm not American. So then I find myself, of course, dragged in into this whole mess. And I've spent the last 3.5 years trying to understand what happened to me. And as you correctly pointed out, the one dinner that happened in Cambridge University in 2014 then ended up years later as a predicate to start the whole counterintelligence operation on General Flynn in order to entrap him and therefore get to Donald Trump. How do we know that?
Go ahead.
Yes. So, as you correctly described, there was at Cambridge University, again, a very interesting academically, but very boring politically place. There was a member of the group, of the history group that I attended. He's called Stefan Halper. So Stefan Halper was a professor, as he sort of tried to call himself. He was this academic. He was trying to, and he regularly attended history seminars. And nothing about him, he was 70 plus, very unpleasant man. Nothing about him betrayed the fact that he was some kind of like master spy. And then in May 2018, we find out from the press report that actually Stefan Halper, on behalf of the FBI and possibly CIA, was running some kind of operation at Cambridge University. We, of course, didn't know that at the time, right? So he was basically running the coup against candidate, later President Trump, from my home university. And it's an incredible story because what he did is he, as you correctly pointed out, he entrapped George Papadopoulos. So him and the Crossfire FBI team, so that's the Russia investigation team, actually flew Papadopoulos from the United States into United Kingdom, London, where Stephen Halper secretly wore a wire and tried to incite, provoke Papadopoulos into admitting some kind of Russian collusion, which, you know, Papadopoulos denied. And he was trying to, Halper was trying to use drinks and a woman on Papadopoulos, which is obviously absolutely outrageous. Then previously, Halper did the same to Carter Page, which is he lured Carter Page to Cambridge University in July 2016, so just before the election. Right. So Carter Page is a Trump campaign advisor, and he was Trump campaign advisor until September 2016. He was forced to leave just before the election because of the news stories about him in the press that he has some kind of somehow been compromised by Russians, and he's the conduit between Russian intelligence or Russians. They keep changing the story, and the Trump campaign. And actually, FBI started an investigation into Carter Page, and which resulted in obtaining four surveillance warrants, which were all obtained after Carter Page already left the campaign. And the two of those four FISAs have already been declared by the court to have been illegal. And the two sources for those FISAs were mainly Christopher Steele, former British spy responsible for the dodgy dossier, and Stephen Halper. And so you then have this man, Stephen Halper, using Cambridge University to lure Trump campaign advisors into England outside the territory of the United States, where they're protected by law, in order to acting as agent provocateur to place the false collusion narrative, both in the run-up to the election, and then he proceeded with similar tricks after the election.
So, okay, so 2017, you're a married woman, you just gave birth, and then what happens?
So in 2017, my baby is just a few weeks old, and I suddenly get the media, the US media, descending on me. So I live in England, and for some reason, of course, I know now, right? But remember, at that point, I was completely unaware of all of this spying and coups and attempts to derail Trump. So I live there in England, just giving birth, finishing my first book, and suddenly Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and other publications all descend on me within 48 hours of each other, and they all have my email address. They all have my name somehow. Remember, I'm in Britain, they're right. In America.
Right.
And they all want to discuss with me my affair with General Flynn. This is the man I met once 3 years previously at the work dinner. I didn't know what was it all about. So I started calling, and then it then transpires that before even coming to me with this, they went around Cambridge University, saw my professors, mentors, colleagues with whom I have to work, and they started spreading those affair allegation rumors to university colleagues first. And they were, of course, outraged. And so was I. My partner spoken to the newspapers because I was too sick after childbirth to speak to them myself. And he had to have those calls in the middle of the night, because of the time zone difference, whilst I was trying to hold a crying baby and beg them not to publish this stuff about me, that I somehow seduced General Flynn and that I've done it on behalf of Russian intelligence. So he kept telling them, look, this is not true. Not just the whole story is outrageous and a complete lie, but also even the details. So one example is the reporters got told that I left dinner with General Flynn. But my husband was there and he picked me up. right? So he says, but she didn't because I picked her up. And they just didn't want to know. Another example is they were saying that I said, next to General Flynn at the dinner, and my husband would have photos. She sat on the opposite side of the table from him, but there was nothing we could say which would change the newspaper narrative. Because
did you ask them who their source was?
Right. So we asked them. Well, we had the idea who the source was. Remember, we didn't know that there was an operation, right? But right. We knew that Stefan Halper was spreading rumors around me, around university, that I'm some kind of Russian spy. But we knew that Stefan Halper was, remember, he's this, you know, aged academic, as he was trying to pretend, at Cambridge University, falling asleep. In presentations. So we just thought, and I asked my mentor about this, right? And he said to me, oh, just ignore this. This is just some kind of old man nonsense, right? He's just, you know, basically losing his marbles, right?
Now, wait a second. So you're saying that the first looking back, okay, the first indication that he was gunning for you was he would come to your lectures and fall asleep?
That's right. So he came to my lecture, you know, it's a very strange situation because Cambridge is a very, very, I know that now, of course, Cambridge has been in the headlines because of Halper's activities, right? But it's a very gentle place. This is somewhere where people exchange ideas. So you mainly work by yourself. You're doing all of this research in the archives, and then you meet regularly each week as a sort of study group, right. And you exchange research ideas, right? So it's very collegiate. I mean, the whole point of being at university, right, is to exchange information, to exchange ideas, right?
Right.
And so our group, which looked at history of intelligence, nothing current, but, you know, looking backwards, was maybe about 10 people. And we used to meet regularly every week. And so what would happen is that everyone was sort of trying to help each other with their research. And Halper, so remember, this is the man I would have been in the same room with, very small room where everyone knows each other, every week for years, right? But we never exchanged words with each other, which is highly unusual, right? Because this is a very, very collegiate environment.
Right.
And the one time where I had some kind of interaction with him is he comes to my lecture and he sits in the front row, and it's a, you know, big lecture hall. He chooses to sit in the front row. He was actually the only person there because normally people avoid the front row, and then spreads himself around, you know, he's a very big man, and then he demonstratively falls asleep in my presentation, and I'm just explaining some really amazing documents I found in Soviet archives, and then he starts snoring really loudly and demonstratively, and then in the middle of it, he suddenly wakes up, says something about Ruskies, and then falls back asleep. And not only was so insulting, but also it's the fact that, you know, even if you're not interested in somebody's research, then you should at least sit there quietly or leave the room, right?
Right.
And so that's the extent. Remember that I was there for years. Everyone knew everything about each other, right? And everyone had a lovely time in Cambridge, but he stuck out as somebody rude, obnoxious. And the only reason, you know, when you ask people about him, people just sort of would avert, you know, their eyes, you know, the senior people who knew him, and just people knew that he was very wealthy, and that he donated a lot of money to the university. And the idea, basically how people understood it, that's why he was there. So it wasn't due to academic, you know, credentials. It was due to the fact that he was rich. And also everyone knew that he, his father-in-law was one of the founders of the CIA. But of course we couldn't believe that he would be an acting spy, right? We just knew that he's this retired rich American who's somehow in England, and people basically avoided him. And of course, we now know that the reason why he was so wealthy is because US government, you the taxpayer, paid him over $1 million at least.
Oh, well, we'll get to that in a bit here. So he comes to your class and does this whole show of, you know, making himself known in a very obnoxious way. How did you connect that to, and what else did he do that finally made you realize he was the one behind fabricating this story about you?
Well, he was often, from the reports to colleagues, he was often spreading rumors about me that I'm some kind of, you know, we don't really know about her background. She's some kind of, could she be some kind of Russian spy? But everyone laughed it off.
Oh, so he actually had a whisper campaign going on?
That's right, at university. But remember that universities, remember I'm a relatively young person, right?
Oh, so and, you didn't go confront him? Why didn't you confront him?
Well, because it was, my professor suggested that I write an email to the group denying that I'm a Russian spy. Right. And I said, I just laughed and I said, what would be the point? Remember, I don't understand this is an operation. Right. I know that this is the man who falls asleep in lectures. Right. So what, you know, there's nothing I have to say to him. Right. And you basically just ignored it. And remember, I didn't have any interactions with him. So the one time he came to my lecture, he slept through. At any other point, I remember there was one occasion where there were no seats left. That's before I heard about the rumors, right, that he was spreading. And there was only one seat, so I had to sit next to him somewhere, right? That is an ante room in before a college dinner, and he literally pointedly got up and moved, right? So that's it. We had no interaction with him, and the only thing that my professor suggested is I write an email denying that I'm a Russian spy, and I'm like,
so
well, I'm not going to do that.
Christopher Andrew tells
right.
me, your mentor. He says write a thing. Why didn't he intervene with Halper on your behalf, or why did you not just go directly to Halper and see what he would say? I mean, I would think Christopher Andrews, as your mentor, it would have been a good idea for him to talk to him. So what happened there?
Well, when I complained about that, he told me to write an email, which I said I'm not going to do. And nothing happened. He did nothing. You know, you're raising a very good question. Why Christopher Andrew didn't do anything about this? And I assume the answer is because somehow he was part of the plot. Right? Because later on,
he was one. You were with this guy for 20 years. You were writing a book with him.
Yes.
Okay.
And we know each other. I mean, that's one of the most sort of painful, outcomes of this whole sorry saga, is that Professor Andrew, I've known him since I immigrated from Russia in 1998, right? I was a teenager, and he's one of the first people I met in terms of academic environment. So he took me under his wing. So he known me for 20 years, from my formative age as a young student in Cambridge, and he was the one who introduced me into the field of intelligence studies. I was actually studying Second World War and things like that. That's one of the shocks. So remember when the media attacks came, one of the people who. So my partner tells the media that the source is acting maliciously because we knew it was Halper, and my husband says it's Halper, and he's acting maliciously. But remember, we don't know at that stage that it's a spy operation, and we know just the said old man has been saying those idiotic things about me. And we thought that surely the newspapers won't write something like that based on some kind of gossip, because Andrew told me when I complained about him, it's just some kind of academic gossip. And the way that Andrew explained it to me is that him, Andrew, and Halper had some kind of business arrangement, some kind of consultancy, and they fell out over money. And Andrew thought, he told me, which we now know it wasn't true, but Andrew thought that basically Halper was attacking me because he fell out with Christopher Andrew, right? And everyone knew that Christopher Andrew was my mentor. He clearly wasn't being truthful with me, right? But that's what I was being told at the time. And remember, it's very difficult with to imagine then that this man, the said old man, would be in the middle of some kind of sophisticated, espionage operation, right? So you just have somebody basically saying things and you just basically ignore it because I didn't think it was serious. Right. Until
the press
reports. And then what was very, very worrying with the press is that anything that, that me and my partner told the press, they just disregard it. So any the stories were pre-written. The whole thing was prepackaged. And another horrible aspect of this is Christopher Andrew does his separate piece around the same time, which I didn't see because he doesn't name me. He just describes me as a Russian woman, right? Which is kind of funny because up until that point, he described me as a brilliant academic, right? But I suddenly become this attractive. And so Christopher Andrew writes an article in February 2017, just around the time that all these other newspapers, come to attack me. And in that article, he gives a completely false account of the events 3 years previously, saying that General Flynn was attracted to me, that he invited me to Moscow with him, and none of those things happened.
I'm so shocked. Go ahead.
Right. And so was I, but I didn't know about that. So it was actually the newspapers, the American newspapers that told us about this article. So I then confronted Christopher Andrew and said, why did you do this? And he said that he was under pressure and he was trying to prevent some worse fake news article from coming out. And then when I kept following up with him and saying, you should withdraw this article because it's very damaging, right? Because other newspapers are using that as a sort of second source for the Halper lies, right? Andrew stopped talking to me, said that he's very ill, he's like 70 plus, and he started getting his wife to call me up and say I should stop bothering him because he's very unwell. And this is the silence and the refusal to correct the problem is just absolutely outrageous, especially now that we know that this was actually an operation. So that the only conclusion is Christopher Andrew is somehow unfortunately part of the problem.
So, I mean, The Guardian writes about you and they say that they understand that you and Flynn remained in email contact and Flynn signed himself as General Misha, which explain what General Misha being like a term of endearment or something, you know, indicating you having a close relationship with him or something.
So the General Misha is absolutely untrue. General Flynn did not sign himself off like that. And with regards to the email contact, what happened after, so General Flynn attended the event in Cambridge in his honor. And the reason why, there was this really, really nice dinner organized for him, it took place at Pembroke College. So this is one of the old colleges at Cambridge University, in the personal lodge of the master of that college, Sir Richard Dearlove. So Sir Richard Dearlove used to be the head of MI6. So that's British version of the CIA.
Right.
And then after he retired from the civil servant, he became a master, which is like an honorary position. And he personally, as the kind of one of the most important people at Cambridge University, he personally organized that dinner to which General Flynn was invited. And also General Flynn was accompanied by his defense intelligence liaison. And remember, again, this is Obama time.
Yeah.
So at that point that Flynn was working for Obama, and Flynn was accompanied by his liaison people. And then we had Christopher Andrew, we had Richard Dearlove, we have a couple of other senior people from Cambridge University side. And then we had a selected group of postgraduate researchers who were, I'm a modest person, but that's what we were told, like they've chosen the brilliant ones so that they can show off to the DIA how great Cambridge University is in terms of research. Right. And the reason why they needed that is because there was a contract between Defense Intelligence Agency and Cambridge University where parts of our research were being commissioned by the DIA. And our names were given in advance to the DIA of those 1 month in advance of those who were going to attend. So they clearly would have been checked out on all the databases to make sure that there are no suspicious people. Because, of course, you won't let the head of DIA, just to walk in a room full of strangers. And so those who've been approved, like myself, then attend this dinner. And at the dinner, I was asked to show my research, which I did. And as a follow-up, the research, it was Christopher Andrew and Richard Dearlove who encouraged me to share my research with General Flynn. And I showed him an old postcard, which was signed by Joseph Stalin, which was an amazing find, because at that point, Stalin wasn't this, you know, dictator and in control of, you know, a big chunk of the world. He was actually on the run. He was a young revolutionary. He was on the run from the Tsarist secret police. And he wrote this note, and it was a very interesting document. And so General Flynn asked to be sent a copy of that historical document, which I duly did, copying Christopher and Junius. And then we had some follow-up correspondence because we were planning a joint Defense Intelligence Agency and Cambridge University conference for 2015, a year later, which actually did happen after all, and I was one of the key speakers there. So what the correspondence was war correspondence about research and about academic events, and I've always either copied those emails into Christopher Andrew or forwarded them to him.
Did you show those to the press?
Of course.
And they still General Misha'd you?
But there was nothing you could do. There's nothing you could say that. And this is what I mean. Is
so
it's part of an operation?
These were well chosen journalists, then, if you know what I mean.
Well, of course, because we know now that, you know, I've spent 3 years researching it. Of course, I was completely naive, thankfully, at the time, because it would have been very stressful on top of everything else to know that this was in operation. Is, for example, one of the people who approached me, and remember, it was coordinated. It was within 48 hours of each other, right? The same fake story. 3 years after the non-events. Yeah. And one of the people who flew to England is David Ignatius of Washington Post.
Oh, yeah.
And he's obviously very well connected with the CIA, the joke being that he has his own parking spot, you know, at Langley. And so this, but I didn't know any of that, right? So David Ignatius, who is not a young man, jumps on an airplane after the election to come see me, some random woman in Cambridge, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So he sends me an email and says that he wants to meet with me to discuss, you know. And then I also received an email from Christopher Andrew saying that he's close friends with David Ignatius. Remember, I don't know who David Ignatius is at that stage. And he says I should meet him. So Christopher Andrew knows I've just given birth a few weeks previously. And so I'm at home with the baby. He knows I'm unwell because, you know, we were very close before. And then he also remember that David Ignatius, just a few weeks before he jumps on the plane to see me in England, he just actually published that illegally obtained transcript of the, or rather bits of it, from the General Flynn call with Russian Ambassador Kislyak, which ultimately caused General Flynn his job.
Right.
And of course, we now, literally as we're on the phone right now, there is a case going on in the General Flynn saga, which has been going on and on. It's now with the Court of Appeals, which is related to that phone call with the Russian ambassador. Right?
Right.
And so David Ignatius was the person who published that call. And then he flies all the way to England to discuss General Flynn with me. And so then what's happening is that...
exactly did that discussion comprise of, since you and Flynn were...
Well, exactly.
Buds.
And I refused to attend this discussion because remember, by that stage, the reporters were saying that I had an affair
right.
with General Flynn. So I wasn't going to meet any reporter to discuss some kind of affair. Now, of course, what we know now, there's been amazing revelation in the General Flynn case where for... What is it? 3 years it's been hidden from the public, from me, 4 years probably. It was hidden from the public, from me, from General Flynn's lawyers, from General Flynn. Is they so you know, as a prehistory, is that General Flynn was being sentenced in court for lying to the FBI, and then he withdrew his plea because he said he was coerced into this. And Attorney General Barr has appointed an independent a U.S. attorney to independently look into the General Flynn case. And this is Mr. Jensen in St. Louis, Missouri. And Mr. Jensen looked through the General Flynn files, and he uncovered a 12-page memo, which is basically an FBI closing memo. So that happens when the investigation on someone gets closed. So remember, there was a counterintelligence investigation, General Flynn, which was started in August 2016. And counterintelligence is a very strong, word, which is that counterintelligence means basically espionage, right? Yep. So they were investigating during the election campaign, they were investigating General Flynn for espionage on behalf of Russia. Which is just so ridiculous and outrageous, because remember, he is a recently retired head of DIA. He kept his highest level security clearance. He's attending security briefings with the then candidate Trump. He's going to become the national security advisor, and they're secretly investigating him for being a spy for Russia. Right. But then they clearly don't get anywhere, because in January, 5th of January, they decide that they have to close the investigation, because clearly General Flynn is not a spy for Russia. But then there's been this text message where Peter Strzok, who is the counterintelligence FBI person in charge, say that the seventh floor, the leadership of the FBI, have interfered to keep the Flynn case open. So although we now have the closing memo, but they actually never closed the case, right? It remained open at that point.
Yeah, what exactly did he say something about? A text saying, we've got to get him somehow, get him to lie? Or
that's right, that's right. Yes, because so they don't close the investigation on him, instead of which they interview him to get him to lie. That's it. But what's in the closing memo is it's a 12-page document. Remember, they never closed the case on General Flynn. But the closing memo tells us how they actually opened the investigation on General Flynn, which is a very serious thing, right? To open on one of the nation's top intelligence officers. So in the memo, they have the FBI check out General Flynn on all of their databases and find nothing derogatory about him. They also go through his trips to Russia, which were work-related, nothing derogatory about that. They also confirm that he's a holder of a TSSCI clearance, TSSCI clearance, which is top secret security compartmentalized clearance, which is the most highest clearance you can have in land. And he's an active holder at that point, meaning he's completely clean. Right. And then the FBI say they go to a confidential human source, which is Halper. And how we know that, because that's what in the Inspector General report. And Halper gives them information that he, Halper, witnessed, and the word is witness, and the name is redacted, but I know it's about me, because that's, of course, what the journalist told me, that Halper witnessed me, Svetlana, leaving the dinner with General Flynn in Cambridge, and Halper can't even remember the day. So he says, in this document, in this bombshell memo, FBI memo, he says that he doesn't remember the year, but this was at the time that General Flynn was still employed by the U.S. intelligence community, i.e. head of DIA. And the FBI person who's taking down the note has to then Google the date. Right. So right. Halper is giving evidence about an event which he hasn't actually attended, but he said he did. He wasn't actually at the dinner with General Flynn, but he's given evidence that he was, and he can't even remember the year of that dinner. So the FBI person says we had to use open sources, i.e. Google, to look up when Flynn was actually in Cambridge. Because remember, this is 2016, and they're talking about events 2014. And in that, Halper says that he witnessed me after the dinner get into a taxi with General Flynn, and then go in the taxi to the train station, and then take a train to London with General Flynn. And that this was so shocking that everyone was surprised, I'm quoting the memo, that everyone in the group who saw that was surprised that I jumped into the taxi with General Flynn. I mean, not only that didn't happen, but it couldn't have happened. The whole thing is outrageous and ridiculous, right? I mean, Flynn was, of course, accompanied after the dinner by his, you know, DIA liaison and security detail. I left dinner with my husband later because I stayed behind with the group to discuss the dinner. But Halper, 2 years later, during the election campaign, in order to open an investigation on General Flynn, right, and accuse him of being an agent of Russia, he makes up this lie, right, and said he witnessed it. And the reason why FBI say they had to write this down is because he has been their reliable, confidential FBI human source for years. And what that means is if FBI validates someone as a reliable confidential human source, then whatever he says, they just accept, in effect. So they don't actually need any evidence because they say, well, he's been an informer for us for years. We've been paying him so that he's been an informer for them since 2008. This is an IG report. And they've paid him a massive amount of money. The amount is still redacted. But it looks like a 7 or 8 figure sum for being an FBI informer.
Now that's just the FBI, because the DIAs, and we can go into segue into that. Was that separate money from the DIA?
Right. And exactly. But specifically, FBI paid him for many, many years to be a confidential human source for them. What that means is a very specific term, because if they say he's reliable, they validate him as reliable, that means whatever rumor or gossip or outright lies he passes, they just accept because they vouch for him as a reliable source. And this is a clear lie, right? Because remember, there were about 12, 14 people at the dinner. Nobody was surprised because this did not happen. Whereas Halper, who wasn't actually at the dinner, created that story, that fake story in 2016. And then he goes on to say in this shocking FBI memo that he has always had suspicions about me, right? And that I was connected with Russian intelligence. And that's very interesting because remember that I told you that he was spreading these rumors around Cambridge University, right? Well, yeah. He then moved from just spreading those rumors about, that was a part of the plan, because then he makes a report to the FBI. It's a fake report. Of course, he did not suspect me of anything, right? Because remember, I've never, and in fact, the FBI memo goes on to say that they've checked me out on both the US and UK, you know, law enforcement and other databases, and, you know, spoken to various agencies, and no bad information on me has been found. So I'm completely clean, right? But wow. They use this as a pretext. To start a counterintelligence investigation into General Flynn, which later became criminal investigation, which is what we're dealing with today, and it's still dragging on. So remember that they needed some kind of predicate, but they were investigating Russian collusion, but they were no Russians. So Halper took the fact that I was born in Moscow, right? That's a fact.
Yep.
He took the fact that I once, many years ago, was present at the same dinner where Trump's future national security advisor, but of course, remember, nobody knew at the time in 2014 that Trump is going to be a candidate, that Flynn is going to join the campaign, etc. So he would remember no reports, even false reports, came whilst he was working for Obama, right? So they only made up that story in July 2016, right? So Halper made it up and gave it to the FBI, who accepted that, because they wanted to open a investigation, counterintelligence espionage investigation on General Flynn, because they needed to link him to the Russians, right, so that they could link Donald Trump to the Russians.
Yeah.
And they used me, my name, they stolen my identity. You know, I'm not some kind of honey trap woman, you know, sent by Putin, which is what they presented me as. You know, Halper told New York Times that I compromised General Flynn on behalf of Russian intelligence. I seduced him on behalf of Russian intelligence. So can you imagine what an insult to me is?
Oh, I mean,
you know, I'm an academic, I'm a mom.
It's really crazy. I want you to talk about the money that he got from the Defense Intelligence Agency, too.
So he was, Halper is a person who does everything for money, right? So he was being paid for the FBI by the FBI for informing or rather lying about Trump campaign people. But he was separately being paid by the Department of Defense. And he ostensibly was being paid in the region of $1 million for academic studies. But when people looked into his academic studies, they weren't, you know, either, in any event, you don't pay $1 million for somebody to do academic studies. And secondly, Halper falsely claimed that he paid a big chunk of that money away to contributors to his study. But when the journalists contacted the people he listed as contributors, all of them denied taking any money from Halper or contributing to his so-called studies, right? So Senator Grassley has started an investigation into that because the big chunks of that money was being paid at the crucial parts of Spygate, right? So when Halper tries to meet Papadopoulos, when Halper meets Page. And Halper, remember, in 2016, before he meets Papadopoulos and Page, he tries to have dinner with me, right? So what happens is they tell us that, you know, the investigation into General Flynn was open in August 2016, right? But that's not true because Halper wanted to have dinner with me in February 2016. That's 3 months or 4 months before even their sort of semi-official start of the investigation, right? But so for that, they have no predicates.
He wants to have dinner with you.
And this is, remember, this is the man who had the chance to get to know me every week for years.
Wow.
And then suddenly, in the beginning of Spygate, so remember the spying on the Trump campaign, as David Nunes, Congressman Nunes constantly says on the TV, started in early 2016, right? And right. The first act of that was a hit on General Flynn. And so Stephen Halper contacted my then mentor, Christopher Andrew, and wanted to have dinner with me at Andrew's house. I refused because I didn't like Halper. I've explained how rude he has been to me. But Christopher Andrew was insisting, right? And we fell out over that because I just didn't want to attend. But we now know why, because Halper would have used the same techniques he used on Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, which is, you know, secretly recording people right. and trying to put things into their mouth that they don't believe. And if he doesn't get his way, you know, Papadopoulos describes it. And also we now had declassified transcript of Papadopoulos meetings and partial transcript of the Carter Page meetings with Halper, where Halper says, for example, let's go and obtain Hillary Clinton emails, right? And he's pretending to be a friend of the Trump campaign, and he's trying to get Carter Page and Papadopoulos to do something illegal. And both Carter Page and Papadopoulos said, no, 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 we don't want to do that. And then he keeps insisting. So he's not acting as an investigator, right? He's acting as a provocateur. And right. knowing what he did to those two, I'm very grateful that I refused to attend a dinner only because I didn't like him. I didn't know about the operation because, of course, in January 2016 is when he was started to framing General Flynn. So he would have worn a wire. He would have tried to get me to say something. And if I refused, remember, Papadopoulos describes how angry he gets. And then he would have just made it up anyway, which is what they did with others. And luckily, I didn't attend that dinner. And what's interesting about that is he also wanted me to bring to that dinner the research for the book about 1930s that I was writing. And this is the same person who showed no interest, as I described right. in my research, except in fact, contempt. And suddenly in 2016, mid the election campaign, he suddenly wants to see my research, which was very, you know, which is now very suspicious.
But he wants to show that you have deep, you know, you were able to write this amazing book because you have deep, deep contacts, long-term, deep, that I'm sure my reptilian brain is working here, you know, deep contacts in there that, you know, you're probably still working to influence the election.
Well, what he did is, remember, so my research is based on open sources. Anyone can go and look up my sources. And in fact, Christopher Andrew, who is writing the book with me, has seen all my research, right? But Halper needed, remember, he wasn't at the 2014 dinner with Flynn, right, with General Flynn. So in 2016, he needed to have a more updated conversation, right, so that he can make the report he ended up making, saying that he met me, saying that I'm connected with Russian intelligence, because what he told the journalists is that my research is too good to be true. right? So I couldn't have obtained. So remember, I write about Soviet espionage in 1930s, nothing to do with today. Right. But he was told the reports that I couldn't have obtained this research, which is open source, but he said I couldn't have obtained it without direct order from Putin and Russian intelligence. And that ties me up to Russian intelligence, because the lie against General Flynn is in two parts. One is that he had an affair and therefore was blackmailed as a result, right, by the Russians. But the second lie is that I was acting when they falsely say I seduced General Flynn on behalf of Russian intelligence. But I have no links with Russian intelligence, which is why he had to create this ridiculous story that my research indicates that I have ties to Russian intelligence. Whereas in fact, I've lived in England for 20 years. I'm a British citizen. And Christopher Andrew, who's the official historian for the MI5, which is UK security services, has seen all my research.
You know, what's interesting about Halper is that this is not his first rodeo messing around with a campaign. Apparently, about four decades ago, he was responsible, for the Reagan campaign was using CIA officials managed by Halper. Reportedly, this is reported by Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept, reportedly under the direction of former CIA director and then vice presidential candidate George H.W. Bush, Halper got caught running a spy operation from inside the Carter administration. The plot involved CIA operatives passing classified information about Carter's foreign policy to Reagan campaign officials to ensure the Reagan campaign knew of any foreign policy decisions that Carter was considering. So Halper has been playing this game a long time, but since you have outed him in the way that you have, what happened to Halper when you started speaking up and proving that he was part of this operation?
Well, first of all, it's a very good sport. And in my upcoming book, I spend a lot of time on Halper's history. And there is not a scandal in recent American history, a political scandal or financial scandal that he doesn't get involved in. So he gets involved in this operation, against the poison campaign in the 80s. He then gets involved in the Iran-Contra affair. He gets involved in, he was the chairman, the founder of Palmer Bank, which, you would have heard of that scandal. So basically,
well, explain that a little bit, because our listeners might not know. Yes.
Well, it was this bank that was basically connected to the Iran-Contra affair. And so what happens is, and he always, what's very interesting about what you've just read out about him being involved in potentially in election fixing or attempts to fix an election, is he always leaves town. Right? Like, what happens to Halper? Halper always gets away with it. So in that case, because remember, in that case, he was doing dirty tricks for Republicans and he later switched. But in the 80s, he was doing dirty tricks for the other side. And he does those things. And then in that case, actually, New York Times exposed this.
Svetlana, before we go on, you realize that at a certain level, both sides are the same. You realize that, right?
Well, what I'm trying to say is that Halper's activities were known to the Russian investigation team,
right?
Because they are actually in New York Times, right? And what I'm also trying to say is that Halper isn't some kind of, he doesn't have ideology, right? He's just there for money and power. So it doesn't matter who pays him. If Hillary Clinton campaign pays him, he'd do it for her, right? If the FBI pays him, he would do it for them. And that's known about him, because actually it says in the Inspector General report that which has done an audit of Halper's activities, except they still wouldn't name him, that he's just source two. It says that he was a confidential human source since 2008, and then he was fired by the FBI in 2011 because he was mercurial, because he was aggressive towards his FBI controller, and that he wanted too much money. It actually says that in the IG report. And then they rehire that same guy, right, in order to perform this operation against Trump campaign advisors, first of which being General Flynn. And the point is that New York Times, because remember at that stage, you know, obviously Democrats were very upset about, you know, Harper doing that. And they actually exposed this, right, in the New York Times, in the archives. But then the same New York Times today, because this was being done for the other side, are defending Harper, saying that he's some kind of, you know, hero who was sent by the FBI on this super important mission to investigate, you know, this Russia collusion between Trump campaign and Putin to win the election, which is obviously not a lie. But New York Times are defending him, right? Because right. that suits the Democrats. And I, for example, written name to New York Times numerous times because they published that I compromised General Flynn on behalf of Russian intelligence. And they trust Halper, whom they themselves previously exposed as a serial dirty trickster.
So they don't recognize anything that you send to them. I mean, the pictures of the party that you actually put in. I want to get, before we run out of time, I want to get to your lawsuit that you filed and what happened and what you're trying to do now.
Well, so I have I can't go into the detail because it's a live lawsuit, but suffice to say I have a lawsuit against Halper and the media defendants. So these are the newspapers that collaborated with Halper,
right,
in this lie.
Well, so what happened? Halper is no longer at the University of Cambridge, is he? Or is he?
Well, no, he's not. And but again, what's been happening is he's just still protected. So for instance, my name was all over newspapers, including front pages, to the point where, you know, the death threats were being sent to my address because I was portrayed as this traitor working on behalf of Putin, seducing, you know, Trump national security advisor and representing the risk to national security. So my life has been turned upside down. My name, and remember that this memo that I was talking about, the FBI memo, that has been leaked into the newspapers, which is a criminal leak because this is classified, right? It was
right.
classified at the time.
Right.
And it was leaked into the newspapers after they already knew that they can't investigate General Flynn any longer because they found nothing on him. They right. then leaked it to the press, Halper and his co-conspirators, right? And that's how the newspapers then all ended up, because the articles pretty much word for word sometimes match what's in the FBI report that Halper submitted, right?
Right, right?
And so that was done in order to organize this witch hunt in the media and to, you know, show that basically Donald Trump has hired as national security advisor a man who is working on behalf of Russian intelligence,
right.
and that I'm the recruiter. So that's what they were doing. And the end result was my life has been completely destroyed.
Yeah, but
I lost my position at university. I lost.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. What happened to you? Your life?
Well, basically, my life has been just completely destroyed. But at the same time, Halper is, you know, for example, Senator Grassley was on the news, and you know, a few months ago, saying that the Department of Defense the Inspector General wanted to ask him those questions about this this massive contract that he was being awarded of taxpayers' money, and Halper is too ill to answer any questions. At the same time, in the Inspector General report, Halper is not even named. He's source two, right? They won't disclose how much the FBI paid him. He's not on the list. So Senator Graham is calling a list of witnesses for Russiagate, and he's not even on the list. Right? So somebody is protecting him still. And
well,
in fact,
to you, Svetlana, what happened to you? I mean, you lost, did you lose your position at Cambridge? You had a book that you were going to publish and you had talk to us about what happened to you.
Well, just completely destroyed life, you know, because, you know, I was at university, obviously lost all my friendships there. Lost my position because nobody wants to be associated with a scandal. Of course, can't go get another job because again, nobody wants this. Even if people are sympathetic, and just been basically forced to fight. Remember, I'm not even an American, right? So I'm forced for some reason. U.S. government, when they knew about all of this, in fact, I mean, they sent him to my country, England. They sent him to illegally spy on me, right? And not just spy, but actually, spread false rumors about me in order to get a General Flynn and Donald Trump, which I have nothing to do with. But they never came forward and said, look, we want to somehow put it right. They didn't do that, right? He's their paid informer. He's claiming government immunity. He's saying, I was working on behalf of the government. And basically, I'm left by myself to fight this out somehow. So that's a really sad ending, unfortunately.
Oh, my God. Well, isn't Senator Grassley interested in your story?
Well, Senator Grassley is very interested in those contracts because of the role on the committee that he has, and he's been investigating that. But I'm very disappointed that Senator Graham isn't. He has a list of pages of the witnesses he called, but this man is at the center of Spygate, right? And for some reason, he's not been subpoenaed. So who's still protecting this man?
Well, obviously, people who pay him to do their dirty tricks. Maybe they worry about what he might say if he has to answer for what he's done. Might expose. I mean, it is a very, very reptilian world, and I'm so sorry for you that you've been ensnared in it. But I'll tell you what, Svetlana. You are a very smart person. And so that's a problem for them. That's a big problem for them. And you're willing to fight, which, makes you, a double threat. So,
Well, the problem is that they left me with no choice, right? At no point the government come and say, look, this was a huge error on our part. We're going to investigate Halper, in the middle of the spy. Remember, Mueller didn't even bother interviewing me, despite the fact that Halper's intelligence on General Flynn, and remember, Halper was the witness for Mueller, right? Halper's intelligence on General Flynn, i.e. lies, became the basis upon which they started the investigation to General Flynn. Right. Well, but then they just wanted to cover it up. So, the U.S. government, when they paid him, they should have, well, never done it in the first place. But when he realized he's a serial liar, they should have immediately dealt with him. Right. But they didn't.
Well,
I have no choice. How can I, I have to get my reputation back, my name back. So they left me with no choice but to fight for myself.
Well, we're out of time, but we're going to keep track of you, Svetlana. Anytime you want to come on and talk about new developments, you're welcome to, because this is a huge injustice to you, to the American people. It's just wrong. So anytime, you're welcome back.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being on the show today.